Snapshots by Kitsunere 88. One. This is your fault, you know, Percy snarls as he stabs his wand at the log of wood on the block. Defindo! The wood splits down the middle. Oliver picks up the pieces and stacks them on top of a high pile of cut firewood, while Percy gets another log. If you had just left the porcupine quills alone... How much wood are we supposed to split? Oliver cuts in, idly, gesturing with one thumb at the pile. You'd think that would be enough wood, right? We live in a castle, Percy points out, angrily stabbing his wand at the next log to split. It's heated by fireplaces. It goes through more wood than we think it does. Even with the slow burning and insulation spells? Oliver frowns. Shouldn't take that much. Wouldn't be feasible otherwise. We'd go through too much wood, you know. Anyway, haven't you noticed the weather? It's snowing. It's Scotland, in January. It's snowing a lot more than when we got here. Oliver grabs his shoulder, turning Percy to look back at the castle. He can barely see it, though he should have been able to. It should have been looming there, ever present against the sky. They'll come get us when the detention's over, Percy says determinedly, turning back to the woodblock and willing it to be true. It has to be soon. Soon doesn't happen. It's not even a half hour later, the wind ripping through his cloak, that even Percy realizes that he can't continue. Forget seeing the castle. He can barely see the stack of wood that he and Oliver have been working on. He's freezing, his hands numb and his teeth chattering, when he finally lowers his wand.
The woodshed!
Oliver yells. He has to yell because the wind is loud and the snow is muffling. His brown curls are crusted in snow.
It's not much, but it's shelter.
Percy hesitates, looking over his shoulder at the castle, but it's gone. Disappeared, or maybe transfigured into so much snow. He could walk there, he knows the grounds well enough, but with the black lake between here and there, chancing it would be stupid. He doesn't fancy falling into an ice-covered lake. Yeah, he capitulates, and he lets Oliver pull him into the shed with him. Inside, it's still cold and it's dark, but there's no wind. Oliver grabs a split log, not one of theirs, theirs are too wet, and sets it on the floor between them. A few minutes, some cursing and blowing later, there's a fire. We shouldn't, Percy says through chattering teeth, even as the warmth creeps over him like a good wool blanket. We really shouldn't. Between breaking the rules and freezing to death, I know which one I'd choose, Oliver replies, yanking Percy towards him. Come on. Wet clothes off, and we'll wait it out together. Two. Gryffindor against Slytherin is the biggest game of the year. The historic rivalry between their houses flared up to the extreme. There are always pranks the week before, or rather, pranks in quotes, and the games themselves are brutal. There is animus in these games, with neither Marcus Flint nor Oliver Wood backing down. Percy, as a prefect, should be doing something. Maintaining control in the school, punishing offenders, something like that. But in the run-up, it's all he can do to break up fights as he sees it. And afterwards? Well, afterwards is the victory party, and he can let it go for an evening. It's 2 hours into the party when he runs into Oliver in the toilets, grimacing as he stares into the mirror. He looks good. He always does, especially now. But he's pale, and beads of sweat are dotting his forehead. Are you all right? Percy asks, uncertainly. He and Oliver are roommates. Even unlikely friends. Even... They don't talk about that. Not really. But they smile at each other. Just for each other. And sometimes in transfigurations, Oliver jostles his arm in a way that Percy thinks is entirely intentional. But he doesn't dare bring it up. In return, Percy proofreads his papers, and he complains loudly about their quality, but he leaves gentle corrections in the margins and refuses to let anyone else have them. Sometimes they share a drink or a snack, and it's nothing that plausible deniability can't hide, but it's also something.
Yeah,
Oliver says, straightening so quickly he can't stop the small, winded gasp that pops out of him. He coughs.
Yeah, I mean, rough game, you know? You saw both bludgers take me out, one after the other, right?
You didn't see Madame Pomfrey?
Didn't need to.
Oliver shook his head, brown curls bouncing.
It was nothing, just a part of the game. Better get back to the party, you know, as the team captain and all.
Hold on, Percy says, grabbing him on his bicep. Oliver has nice biceps, and Percy does his best to ignore that fact at this instant. If it's nothing, there's no harm in checking.
I'm not going to the hospital wing, Purse,
Oliver replies, rolling his eyes, but he doesn't pull away.
Come on!
Percy ignores him, fishes his wand out from his pocket and casts a diagnosis charm.
2 cracked ribs, Oliver, Percy says when the spell finishes. You are going to the hospital wing.
I can't, Percy.
Oliver grimaces again, sagging slightly.
Team captain, I have to be there. I can go tomorrow.
And just what? Be in pain all night? Percy raises an eyebrow.
Muggles do it.
Oliver shrugs uncomfortably.
Not much you can do for cracked ribs as a muggle, other than not move around so much. I'll be fine.
We're not muggles, Percy sighs, raising his wand. You don't have to do that. Do you trust me? Oliver blinks.
Sorry?
Do you trust me? Percy repeats, and his voice wavers a little as he realizes what he's asking. I mean, to heal your ribs. I know the spell. Oliver laughs, a small one that turns into a wheeze as the air whooshes out of his lungs too fast.
Trust you?
There's a pause. Percy doesn't know if he should take it back or not. Maybe it was all silly, but he really can heal Oliver's ribs, and taking it back would be stupid, and he feels himself flushing. Bright red, beet red, back to his ears and the back of his neck.
Yeah, Purse,
Oliver grins, leaning against the sink.
I'd trust you with anything.
Everything.
Wait, aren't those pretty much the same?
Three. The NEWTs are a year away. Then they're 6 months away. Then they're 4 months away, and then 3. Then 6 weeks, 4 weeks, 2 weeks, 7 days, 4 days, 3 days, and Percy isn't sleeping. Percy hasn't really slept since a week ago, because he needs top grades. He's reading through 2 years of Transfiguration's notes for the umpteenth time, trying to commit everything to memory. His head hurts, and he's tired, so tired, but he also knows that if he tries to sleep, he'll only lie awake, staring at the canopy of his bed for hours.
Hey,
Oliver says from behind him, and he bumps his shoulder with a warm cup of tea. Black tea, it smells like. Plain orange pekoe with a squeeze of lemon, just the way Percy likes it.
It's going to be fine, you know.
Percy wrinkles his nose, even as he accepts the mug.
No, I don't know,
he says, railing against Oliver's words just because he can. These exams determine our future, Oliver. I don't know why you aren't panicking.
Because what'll happen will happen, and I'm trying to get recruited by a professional Quidditch team anyway.
Oliver replies placidly, settling down in a chair beside him. My NEWTs don't matter as much as the Quidditch Cup.
Well, bully for you, then, Percy grouses, sipping at the tea.
The warmth sinks down from his throat into his belly, warming him from the inside out. But it isn't just warm. A few seconds later, Percy feels himself loosening, his shoulders relaxing, and he blinks.
What did you put in this? He asks, staring down at the mug.
A few drops of calming potion,
Oliver replies, gently pulling Percy's notes away from him and sliding them back into the folder where Percy has been keeping them.
Not enough to knock you out, not unless you're seriously sleep-deprived, which it seems like you are.
You shouldn't have done that, Percy complains, even as he takes another sip. Purposely drugging the head boy.
Oliver snorts, pulling Percy up from the chair and slinging one arm around his shoulders. Oliver, too, is warm. A warm and bulky figure,
one that Percy can't help but lean against.
You'll do better on the exams if you just sleep, Purse. Come on, bed. You can go back to it tomorrow.
Percy should argue. He doesn't. Four. Voldemort has taken over the Ministry of Magic. Percy knows it. Everyone does. It's rather hard to miss. He does little things. He and 100 people, they all do little things. Files go missing. There's more bureaucratic red tape than there has been in years. Lists are snatched, names go out, and people go into hiding. But it's never enough. None of it is ever enough, and there's always more. They know each other to see them. Percy, in the Department of International Magical Cooperation, makes identities appear and disappear, and signs off on papers deporting people to the United States, to Canada, to Australia, to anywhere willing to take them. Penelope Clearwater, the Ravenclaw prefect in his year, and a clerk in the Department of Magical Law Enforcement, somehow manages to make an entire day's worth of dockets disappear, letting 30 alleged Muggleborns go free. Cho Chang, in the heart of Umbridge's Muggleborn Registration Commission, filches Muggleborn lists and sends them out so people can run. Oliver Wood, professional Quidditch player and rising star, smiles for camera and promises that Voldemort will make a better world while hiding no less than 3 people in his cellar at any given time. It's a stopping point before Percy or someone else can somehow come up with a way for them to escape the country, and they don't have enough hidey holes. They don't talk much anymore, not unless it's a whispered urgent word here in a dark corner, or a brush of the arm as they pass each other by. Once, they manage to squeeze a handhold as they wait for a door to open. Percy doesn't remember the door or what they were waiting for. He only remembers the desperate, grasping squeeze of Oliver's hand, sweaty, and he remembers squeezing back. And then, it was gone. It's too dangerous. All they ever say, if they say anything at all, is that they're old classmates, old dorm mates. The looks that they shoot each other say differently. 5. After the war, Percy leaves. With Fred, with his family, with everything, it's too much. He can't go to work at the ministry and pretend like all was well. Here was where you-know-who had sat, lording his authority over Wizarding Britain. Here had been Dolores Umbridge's office, where she had smiled as she signed off on hundreds of warrants for Muggleborns. Here had been where Fenrir Greyback paced. There had been Runcorn. And there was where Bellatrix Lestrange had meted out punishment to those who had crossed her or you-know-who. Here was where Cecil Darling had been murdered for nothing more than aiding his wife and family, a Muggleborn witch and their half-blood children, to escape the country. He had stayed. He had stayed under Percy to help get more families out. He had been caught, and there had been nothing Percy could do. He still dreamt of that day, the way you-know-who had forced them all to watch. He still couldn't pass the atrium without thinking about it. Percy's experience of the ministry includes as much of you-know-who as it doesn't. Every corridor is a memory, and none of them are good ones. He thinks about quitting his job. He doesn't. He's a little too much of a coward for that, and he's grown up poor. As horrifying as going to the ministry every day is, the prospect of being jobless and unable to pay his rent is worse. So instead, he puts in for a transfer. He's in the Department of International Magical Cooperation, and they need foreign analysts on the ground abroad. He throws out a list of countries without thinking too hard about it. France, Russia, Germany, the United States, Australia, anywhere that will take him, and figures that he'll work out the details later. He can learn a language fast if he tries. 6 months later, a spot opens up in New York City, and Percy goes. He arrives too close to the holidays to be able to take any holiday. Arriving in mid-December, it seems, doesn't entitle him to take any time off before the new year. But he doesn't mind.
At home, the absence of Fred screams as loud as Fred ever did, and he doesn't want to see it. Instead, Percy works. He takes the quiet time to figure out the New York office processes, reading policy and procedure manuals, and then he apparates home to his flat on the Upper East Side to eat dinner, drink tea, and watch the snow swirling outside. It's New York City, and the snow here is as thick as it was on a long-ago detention when Percy ended up hiding in a woodshed with Oliver Wood. Even so, there are people streaming on the sidewalks below his balcony, all of them in thick coats and hats and scarves, and their laughter swirls up through his windows. It's New Year's Eve. Percy's heard that there's a big celebration to the west of him, at a place called Times Square. He can't imagine leaving his warm flat to do that. A knock comes at the door. Percy hesitates. No one knows him in New York City. Not yet, at least. There's no reason for anyone to be at his flat. But then again, maybe that means he should open the door. Because this is the Wizarding United States, and there is no you-know-who here. You-know-who is dead. With a sigh, he swings his legs down from the ottoman, walks to the front door, and opens it. "Took you long enough," Oliver says, as he barges into the flat. "I was waiting there for 5 minutes. Why are you here? Here, and not watching the countdown to the ball in Times Square?" Percy replies, blinking as he shuts the door. Flat or not, Oliver's brought the cold in with him. "It's cold out. I didn't want to go. What are you doing here?" Oliver's already thrown himself on Percy's couch, his coat strewn over the arm. He cocks his head upwards. "You're here, aren't you?" he asks pointedly. "You're here, and I had time off, so..." "So?" "So, where else would I be?" Oliver grinned. "Come on. If we can't watch the ball drop in person, we might as well watch it on the television."